sahanavavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, sahabiryankaravavahai, tejasvinavaditamastumavidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Bhagavat Sandarbha Adhyayana 4, Adhikarana 5. Bhagavan is the objective of all Vedic knowledge. Okay, then in Prabhupada's purport, one who is thus transcendentally situated realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments or desires to have anything. He is equally disposed to every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. Devotional service is actual liberation. When one is attracted by the beauty of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his mind is always engaged at the Lord's lotus feet, he is no longer interested in subjects that do not help him in self-realization. In other words, he loses all attraction for material activities. So that's the you can see is the principle. Krishna says that when you take up a higher taste, you give up the lower. So that's what happens, is that as one advances in devotional service, there's no interest in anything else. So that's why they don't become upset by anything. They see everyone equally and all that, because there's nothing there for them. There's nothing that they see to gain from any of these things. Right? There's not something they personally want, because that's where problems start. You want something, and then it doesn't work out the way you want it. So, because they're transcendentally situated, you know, so that's transcendental. You just, there is no material desire. Right? But how do you become like that? That's because they're absorbed in Krishna. Right? The more they're absorbed in Krishna. So we see even the position of that Shanta, that's on the liberated, they're absorbed in Krishna. Right? There's no, dynamic rati as such. Right? But they're still transcendentally situated. Why? Because they're absorbed in the Lord. So that's why it's said that for those who try to get to this position without dealing with the Lord, it's very troublesome. And it's just an effect of their work. And so then, next life, it's gone. Right? You know, like anything else, you work hard, you get all your facility, all your money, it's gone. You know, you get to the heavenly planets, but next life you're not in the heavenly planets. Not you keep taking birth in the heavenly planets. You go up there, you have that light, then you're back here. Back to work. Holiday's over. Yeah. And so because they have no attraction to anything in the material platform, there is no problem. As we saw before, I think it was in 11th canto, then Krishna described, misery means having material desire. As soon as there's material desire, then you want, then all the difficulty comes. If you have a desire, then immediately you're miserable because you don't have that desire fulfilled. And then on the road to fulfill that desire, there's so many obstacles and other pains. And then even you get the desire, then you know everybody else is also interested in your desire. You know, so there's just always misery. So if there's no material attachment, there is no material involvement. Therefore, you're liberated. So you see, is that all devotees, to some degree, the newest devotee, their commitment is that they want to become a devotee of Krishna. They're not actually technically interested in the material world. By habit, by impurity, they still have that tendency to interact with the material world. But that's just what's left over. You know, it's just like when you go into the shower to take a bath. You know, once you just step into the shower, you know, you're in the cleaning process. You know, of course, you haven't scrubbed yet and this and that, so then there's dirt. But The point is you're in the shower. You know? So it's not, and as you just keep at it, it just gets better and better. So the devotee, then their position is transcendental. You know? Of course, if one is too attached to material things and becomes too distracted by them, the effect that you get is not really devotional. You'll see in your life you're just absorbed in this and that and so many other things. But the devotional credit that you have from the past doesn't go away because it's eternal. The soul's done those things, so those remain. Right? But they can distract themselves. That's why it said you have to be careful. You don't let the weeds grow. You are conscious. Krishna's taking away so much, but then those weeds that you're conscious of, that you actually are interested in, then those also grow along with it, so you have to be careful to take them out. Because we see devotional service is growing, the weeds growing, we think it's all devotional service. No, but you have to be careful. You have to know the difference between what's rice and what's weeds. Right? You ever seen that in the fields, when they first plant the rice in the fields, especially when it's in the water, that it just looks like a blade of grass. And then the farmers go through, you know, once there's so many blades of grass there, and they just know which one's the rice and which one's not. They look very similar. Right? And they just go through and take them out and like that. So like that, we have to be careful. That's why so much definition is given, so we know what's real and what's a weed. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah.
We come to know about our weeds, and some of the weeds are very prominent, so we still derive some, at least mentally get stick to that point. And
right.
Here, parallelly, there is no taste developed, so the taste is still coming from that weed. Although we know it is a weed, but how do we take out during that clash? We have a very strong weed. We know it is a weed, but there is no taste developed yet in spiritual side. So still, mind tends to take direction based on that kind of weed.
Okay. But what is the process for getting rid of impurities?
Continuing spiritual.
Yeah. So there's no... In other words, if one finds weeds, focus more on your devotional life. Because if you're focused on devotional life, you're not engaged in the weed. Right? In other words, if you're chanting a japa, there's no weed. You're just sitting out in a nice field, you know, during a circle dance with a marigold, you know, marigolds in your hair. There may be a lot of weed. You know? So we avoid the weed. Does that make sense? Point is, if you're doing devotional service, you're not doing something else. That's the whole point, is that the impersonalists and the other religionists, they're trying to stop the improper activity by just on its own. But devotees, they do something else. Right? You can take that child's being naughty and just tell them they have to sit here, not move. And it might calm them down, but at some point they have to be active. But if you engage them in positive activity, they're not doing any nonsense. So that's the whole idea. It's not a separate thing. See, we have to give up the idea that, okay, there's the chanting and all that, then there's this whole other thing that we have to deal with. No. You take care. Why is that whole other thing there? That's because we are not surrendered to Krishna. We want to be a controller and enjoyer. So, that giving up that position of serving Krishna, that's where all these anarthas have come from. So what's the solution? The anarthas have come up from not being engaged in devotional service. So what's going to solve the problem? Being engaged in devotional service. So it's not something separate. And just because of their taste is there, that's just from past habit. If we focus on that, oh no, I'm into this, oh I'm that, oh no, everything's terrible, I'm not a bad, then of course, what are you meditating on? Weeds. What's the benefit you'll get? Weeds. So if you meditate on Krishna, then you get Krishna. So we have a taste in meditating on that we don't have a taste. Yeah, yes.
I think Siddhanta Saraswati, he mentioned at one point, he said, we follow artha pravritti. We don't follow anartha vritti.
Yes.
So, Artha Praviti includes Anartha Nivriti, but Anartha Nivriti doesn't include
Artha Nivriti. Yes. Yes, because if the goal is to develop love for Krishna, so if you're focused on that, it already naturally, how do you develop love for Krishna if the heart's impure? So the heart will become purified. It's not that it's a separate endeavor. We have this idea that devotional service, okay, is the chanting and this and that, but we don't see it as it's all-inclusive. Devotional service is the natural activity of the living entity. There is no other. Anything else that we're doing is unnatural. So if you're doing the natural activity, it's just like, let's say, you know, that example Prabhupada gives of the sun. And he, you know, either forgets or something happens, so he's out on the road. His father's very wealthy, very influential, you know, very all these things. And someone comes up to him and said, you know, you're, you know, why are you on the street? You're the son of this very rich man, you know, why you're here and suffering and, you know, homeless and begging and all these things. Why are you doing that? And so now if he asks, well, how do I get rid of this, you know, I have to beg because I have no place, go to the house. No, no, but, you know, how will I take care of my food and where I sleep? Go to the house. No, no, but, you know, what about all these? That's what we're doing. So this idea is that, oh, if we do devotional service, who's going to pay the bills? You know, who's going to take care of the family? Who's going to take out the garbage? You know, who's going to make all those arrangements to go, you know, on vacation? You know, who's going to, you know, do all these things, take the kid to the dentist, as if these things are separate from devotional service. Why are you taking the kid to the dentist? So the teeth are all right. Why do you want good teeth? So that you can do your service. Why do you pay the bills? You have a place to stay. You have different facilities so you can do service to Krishna. It's all part of service to Krishna. But we separate it due to just lack of, you know, information. It means we have the information, but due to understanding or realizing it. So the solution is just absorb yourself in devotional service. That's what Krishna says directly and indirectly. And then the anartha nivriti on its own goes. So we don't focus on anartha nivriti on its own and think it'll do. But it's not that we're not aware that it's there. So it's not that we're doing some nonsense and saying, oh no, we're chanting it because that's the, you know, one of the offenses to the name. Does that make sense? You know, or that we have the idea, no, we have to become good people and moral people and all these things. We have to focus on that, make that endeavor. You know, people aren't nice enough. You have to really make that endeavor, you know, like that. And so then that's the offense of thinking the karmakanda is equal with devotional service. So we have to be careful of all these weeds. We're aware of that. We're careful. But it's not that we're making a separate endeavor for anartha nivriti. You know, we're aware that anartha nivriti is necessary, but it's happening because of what Prabhu is saying. Bhakti Siddhanta says what he talked about, artha pravriti. Right? We're gaining the benefit of devotional service to Krishna. That includes getting rid of the material energy. You know, it's just like saying, you know, why are you sitting in the darkness? Turn on the light. Okay, yeah, I can flick that switch, but who's going to get rid of the darkness? You know, no, you turn on the switch, so when the light's there, all the darkness will go away. Okay, that's nice, there'll be light, but what about the darkness? How will we get rid of the darkness? This is the logical level of our arguments that, no, we require all these material things to do service. You know, when you put it into that context of this example, it sounds foolish, it sounds ludicrous. But then when we switch it into our environment, oh no, now it makes so much sense. You know, until I get this skill, I can't do devotional service. Until we develop these particular, you know, nice material qualities, you know, until we get accepted by the public, we can't do it. All these are just like saying, you know, who will get rid of the darkness when I'm now is darkness. I turn on the light. Who's going to get rid of the darkness? And like it's a separate thing. Does that make sense? You know, and that's why we, agree that there are, you know, personalities of darkness that they can make the darkness overwhelm the light. There's no question of it. You know? It doesn't happen. So that's it. We have to give up this idea that devotional service is not complete. That's faith. Faith means you have the faith that devotional service, by doing that, everything's accomplished. We may not be so expert at it. We may not be so understanding or realized in the field. But we still have that faith. That's pure devotion. You know, we still may be, you know, have a neophyte and be overwhelmed by these things, but we have that faith that this is the real thing. And so we get that. And so that's the third class pure devotion. He moves forward. Or you can get right into, you know, the joys and glories of being a third class devotee and you know, get into all the different social this and economic and, you know, enjoy yourself there with all the miseries that go along with it. Or you can just not worry about it. You just focus on devotional service and these things just come because you're in the material world. People ask, why is this happening? Because you're in the material world. Why is there suffering? Because you're in the material world. Why are people so nasty and envy? Because you're in the material world. Why do people behave so bad? Because you're in the material world. Why did this guy, you know, do this and you know, this guy fell down? Because you're in the material world. It's the same answer. But we somehow or another think, no, it's a new field. You know, somebody bumped into my car. Why does this happen? You know, I'm a devotee of Krishna. Because you're in the material world. So we have to understand is that if you absorb yourself in the spiritual platform, then where's the material? Material is simply a transformation of the spiritual. So if you're working with Yoga Maya, then where's the Mahamaya? But the temporariness of the manifestations of things in the material world, yes. That's because that's what it's made from. In the spiritual world, everything's made from the chit potency. So everything's eternal. Here it's made from the external potency. So everything manifests temporarily. That's just the nature of it. So we shouldn't ask about the temporary nature, because that's what you're dealing with. You know, does somebody go, you know, why did the banana rot? You know, why did it go bad? I'm a devotee of Krishna and I wanted to use it for Krishna, but, you know, I've been busy for the last 2 weeks doing so many things, you know, like that. Why did Krishna allow the banana to rot? It's like people go, are you stupid or what? Bananas rot, you know, but somehow or another that, because we're not too attached, we're not attached to the banana. So we can say that, but the person is attached to the banana. But then something else, how did this happen? How did this, happen and this and that and this, so many things, that, because this, you're in the material world. That's just the way it is. You know what I'm saying? So we have to be able to appreciate that devotional service covers everything, and when you have that mentality and that commitment, then you're liberated. So in other words, having that faith, you're liberated. Being able to act on that faith, to have that degree, that much you're liberated. Does that make sense? You know, until you get to Vastu City, and then that's the, you can say that's the real, the fully real liberation. Right? Does that make sense? Okay? Yeah. In the Taittiriya Upanishad 2.7, it is said, Esha hevanandayati yada hevaisha etasmin nadrishyate natmye anir rupte nilayane bhayam patishtam vindate taso bhayam gato bhavati. A living entity becomes established in spiritual blissful life when he fully understands that his happiness depends on spiritual self-realization, right? As long as we think it's on material, we'll suffer. But if we understand it's on spiritual, then we'll be happy. Right? Because otherwise, material things go wrong. If we're not looking to that for happiness, then, you know, it's just, does that make sense? You know, it's just like you're here. Did, let's say, 5 minutes ago, were you feeling some intense suffering? Any of you? No. There was a squirrel over there trying to get up the wall. And he jumped up on this side, fell off, jumped over there and fell off. And then eventually we saw him running across the top. So that anxiety he was feeling because he couldn't climb up the wall, were you miserable? Why not? Because you couldn't care less about climbing up the wall. Right? So you're happy. So that's the whole thing, is that we project the material needs. Then when it doesn't go the way we want, then we become miserable. But if all we're trying to do is spiritual, so if you're just trying to engage yourself in everything in Krishna's service, then as it transforms, it's just a new situation to serve Krishna. Does that make sense? That's all. That's the principle. A living entity becomes established in spiritual blissful life when he fully understands that his happiness depends on spiritual self-realization, which is the basic principle of ananda, bliss. And when he is eternally situated in the service of the Lord, who has no other Lord above him. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.19.20 purport. So if you, it's some Lord, but there's a Lord above that Lord, then it's not complete. It has to be that Lord who there's no Lord above. You know how you say, O Lord, O Most High. Right. That Lord. Right? Okay. Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur. Bhakti Yoga without material cause, Ananya Nimitta, is the sarup of Apavarga. Right? So that's the form of it, is that there's devotional service with no material purpose. Right? Because otherwise, karma and jnana, to gain their benefits, you also have to use bhakti, but they have a material cause for it. They want material benefits, so they're doing bhakti. Like someone is there, then they want, then that's there, right? But for the devotee, then the sarupa is that means is bhakti yoga without material cause. So that is the natural sarupa of the path of going back to Godhead. Apavarga, by conventional usage, means liberation. That is true. But liberation, destruction of ignorance, is included in bhakti. Right? Because you get liberated from the material world, but unless you get rid of the avidya that brings the living entity under conditioning, then you're not actually liberated. But liberation and destruction of ignorance, they're both in bhakti. Well, in liberation, there's only liberation. There's no destruction of ignorance. Maybe the effect of the modes of nature within the material world, but the avidya shakti, that they don't see themselves connected to Krishna, service of Krishna, that does not go away by liberation. Therefore, bhakti can also be called liberation. This liberation is achieved by destruction of the knot of ignorance, which causes so many goals. When does this take place? It takes place when there's association with the devotees of the Lord. Sardartha Darshini 5.19.20. But, yeah. This statement describes Sadhya Bhakti as liberation. Thus, it is understood that there are two types of liberation. The Lord created upadis ultimately for destroying jiva's ignorance, which produces material goals, akalpanaya, and then produces liberation of either type. Right? Because the upadis are there, then there's problems. Right? As soon as there's an upadi, there's a problem. Get rid of the upadi, no problem. Right? And so, therefore, that will give you liberation, but of these two types. Either the one where we just want to get rid of the material problems, that liberation, or the one where we want to solve that and take up the natural position of service of the living entity, go back to Godhead. This should be said. Since the Lord created upadis for the visible entities for the purposes listed, he created the living entities as suitable vehicles for Shakti to accomplish these goals. Right? So the energies are there to attain whatever these goals are. Right? Whatever it is, you use the Shakti properly, you continue with that. You don't use it properly, you don't get that facility. Then where you put your attention and do it properly, those Shaktis you'll be able to use. Does that make sense? Yeah. The Shaktis for accomplishing Artha, Dharma, and Kama are portions of Avidya Shakti, a function of Maya, which causes creation of various objects. Since this Shakti is concerned with material action, it is the cause of repeated birth while misplacing one's identity. Right? Because Artha, Dharma, and Kama, you need a material identity for. Like that. The shakti producing moksha is a portion of the chit shakti, which destroys the creations of maya, since that shakti takes the form of bhakti and favorable jnana. Right? If you're actually liberated. So mayavadis don't really fall in this category. But they talk the same way, and because of them, everyone's influenced. Therefore, then they don't take up bhakti. That's why then we have such issue with the mayavadis. Because of that. Because if it's impersonalist, you know, like the four kamaras of that, then that's still, they're talking about that connection with the chit shakti. Well, these others, they don't think there's any shaktis. Right? There's only Brahman. There's no shaktis. Otherwise, there'd be shakti parinamabad. But they say, no, it's Brahma parinamabad. And so, therefore, then, they don't believe in that shakti. They just think it's when you went by knowledge and you go. But the problem is that knowledge is under the modes of nature. Like that. So it's only a portion. Yes?
It seems that when we, like Mayavadis do, when we say that Brahman is without shakti,
yes,
then we have to say Brahman is without qualities.
Yes.
Because they are closely connected.
Yes.
So then he is like Nirguna Brahman.
Yes. Yes. And so that's the problem is that, but there is no Nirguna Brahman. Means Nirguna in the sense there's no material qualities, but Brahman is the effulgence of the Lord's eternal unlimited qualities. But they're generic, they're impersonal. So there's a non-manifestation of anything. Right? But then the point is then from the material creation, based on that, then you get the creation here. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the existence is based on this jnana shakti. Right? So it can either be the material nature or the spiritual. Right? So by the effect of the kriya in the spiritual world, then you get the spiritual manifestation. By the effect of the modes of nature in the material world, then you get the material manifestation. Because right? There's the Lord's, you know, here it means the time factor and these kind of things then are functional. So it's just a reflection of the spiritual. Does that make sense? Does that work?
Yes, I'm just thinking because sometimes it's confusing. I remember Lakhma Upanishad says that it's just the naming is a little different.
Yes.
It says Svabhaviki Bala
Jnana
Bala
Kriyacha.
Bala Kriyacha.
Yeah.
So we say Sandini Sambit.
Yes.
And they say Bala Kriya. No. Svabhaviki Bala Jnana Kriya. And then we say
Jnana Kriya Bala.
Yes. So it's just the same and different.
It's the same, is that you're bringing out a different feature.
Oh.
So if you're saying that Bala, then that will be, you know, his opulence and everything. Because Bhagawan means opulence.
Right.
Right? So that means he has all the shaktis and everything like that. So jnana is going to be, you know, the knowledge and the basis, the existence. Kriya is going to be action. But then what you do with that, that's happening within his pastime. So he's the Lord. And, you know, so in other words, you're pointing out that he's Bhagavan.
Right.
So therefore, Bala. But you can also point out that he's you know, the Lord and all that. Then the Icha. So Icha and Bala, you're saying this, you're just bringing out different aspects. Because he is the source of all opulence. Right? Then with that opulence, you do something with the Kriya. And it's what's going to be happening in an environment. But those, the Kriya and the Jnana have expanded from that Bala. Does that make sense? And so it's just how he does things. And so, but it all comes back to the person. That's the whole point. That's why it's constantly being brought back, because you're bringing up different aspects, how it comes back to the person. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, because you could also then shift it over. Is that because of Bala, means then this, you know, the energy and all that, that's therefore everything's manifesting from there. So are you taking the point that he's the source of everything, he's existence of everything, or it's that he's the action that he does with that, or it's that he's the source of that and it's about him? So even you take even one of them, you can take make it into three. You know what I'm saying? So that's why then you see is how are the acharyas using it at that in that context. That's why you say is that everything's expanding from Shankarshan. But others will say everything's expanding from Vasudeva. Right? So then in this is that they're both correct in that Vasudeva is the origin, and it's because of his pastimes, therefore Shankarshan expands everything. So then you see in the explanation Bhaktivinoda Thakur is giving is that when you talk about the Icha, Icha is the cause for the Lord's pastimes, the Dham, the devotees, you know, the interactions, the tastes, everything is all coming from the Icha. Right? Then it'll mention that, you know, the spiritual realms, all the spiritual places, all that, they're all expanding from the Kriya. But it's just mentioned that the Dham is coming from Icha. So, based on Icha, then Kriya is manifesting it. But the cause is Icha, not Kriya.
So it's like immediate cause and then the original cause.
Yes. So that's the thing, is that sometimes we don't distinguish. You know, because we say, you know, Mahavishnu does all this, he's the source, he's that and all that. But at other times we'll talk about he's coming from Krishna.
Yeah.
So that's why you say Krishna is the cause of creation. No, no, but you just said Mahavishnu. But the whole point is... So we're always trying to... We're focusing on a particular thing, but that all goes back to Krishna. Just like the devotees can focus on a particular activity. Like Mother Jashoda is cooking and can focus on that, but it's for Krishna. You know? Like that. So by his desire, then this cooking is going on. But at the same time as... the mechanics of the cooking is going on by the Kriya Shakti. And the knowledge of the cooking and the existence of cooking and that cooking itself as a principle can be performed, that's from the Jnana Shakti. So on the spiritual platform, you don't have to make the distinctions because it's just devotional service. We make the distinctions because otherwise we may mistake what's devotional and what's not. Because that's what truth is, right? Distinguishing the difference between matter and spirit. And sometimes we don't make that distinction. You know, like earlier in the class that we were discussing, someone thinks, oh, unless we develop all these, you know, nice, good, you know, wholesome qualities, then we can't be devotees. That's a material mix. That's a material mistake. Because qualities come from Krishna, not from the material energy. So therefore, if you're serving Krishna, then you're associating with him, why won't those qualities come? And you can say, oh, but devotees are doing this, they did all this nonsense. But the point is the thing is why there's no impurities from before? Why is it another devotee didn't do that? So it's not the devotional service produced that. It's that's what they were before. Like one time, it was very funny. I was hearing one devotee explain that he was there, and some devotee he hadn't met before, and there was some with some other devotees, and that and they introduced him. He was a big book distributor, very, you know, very well known and renowned like that. And this other devotee was there, and you know, like that. Oh wow, Prabhu, you know, where are you from, and all this, and like that. And then he mentioned he was from, you know, the same state, and he says, oh, and then where, you know, in the same city. He says, and then so what school did you go to? They went to the same school, but the devotee's asking questions hadn't said anything yet about that he's from there. And then he said, did you know this guy in school? He said, oh yeah, that guy was so bad. You know, that guy was, you know, I was so afraid of him. You know, he was the biggest, toughest guy in the school, and this and that. Then, no, and after he'd said this whole thing, then he says, I was that guy. Yeah, so I did get into that. That was an example for something.
How the Tathasta Lakshana, it's not that the Surupa Lakshana is the main, the Tathasta Lakshana is the secondary.
Yes.
Means the secondary is the secondary, but the main, we can be devotee with bad qualities.
Yes, okay, that's where it came from. Yes, that part. So the whole point is, you may be, because that's the background. And so when you first come in, they might be that tough and everything like that, but with time then they get purified. So it's a big mistake to look at the 60s and 70s, even early 80s, and then think, all this bad stuff going on is because of devotional service. So we have to cultivate these other good material qualities separately than devotional service. It says that's a total illusion. No, the bad qualities are just simply those individuals have those bad qualities. But it's their illusion, because the conditioning is an illusory state. So if they just engage in devotional service, it will all go away. Because now you see, so many years later, they don't have those qualities. They're very, you know, considerate and kind and everything like that. Though back then they were rough and tough. And does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that It devotional service makes it go away. So it's an illusion that devotional service doesn't include every other religious process. It's an illusion. And so when you have that faith, then you understand bhakti includes everything. It's the all-inclusive. It's the potency of the Lord to bring you to Krishna. Now, if you just want to interact with his energy, Maya will do that. But if you want to interact with his energy in connection to Krishna, that's bhakti. That's like saying, if you want to have an arm, then you have to go through a particular, you know, study and get degrees and certain practices so that in the reflection in the mirror that, you know, you develop a head or an arm. Right? Is that how it works? Right. In other words, let's say you don't dress very nicely, right? And so then, when you have to get the form in the mirror to be dressed nicely, and once you get that, then you'll be dressed nicely. But only until you do that, you can't be dressed nicely unless the form in the mirror is dressed nicely. But anybody with intelligence knows it's a reflection. So if I dress nicely, automatically the reflection is nice. But they see it opposite. That's a mode of ignorance. So we have to be very, very careful of these things. That's why we have to. We can't take it that whatever before we thought was glorious or not, it may or may not be glorious. It only becomes glorious when it's connected to Krishna. Like that. You know, otherwise, yes, back in the 60s, there were so many of these nice moralistic platitudes. But the point is they were just mundane. They may be more motive goodness mundane, but they're mundane. But it's not that now in 2020, they're not mundane anymore. It's not that, you know, after, you know, how you say, 60 years, now they've, you know, somehow or another transformed and become spiritual. No, they're just as mundane as they were 60 years ago. And we also have to look at it. 60 years ago, that's pretty old. So, okay, why don't we take that from the 60s? Let's go back to the 1900s. So the values then and all that, you'll say, oh, what do you mean? We moved on from that. So why can't we move on from the 60s? Why? What's so sacrosanct about the 60s? You know? In the 60s, we're not saying, oh, the turn of the century, that's sacrosanct. You know? Look, maybe in France, you know, what is it, the... What do you call it? The golden age?
Renaissance.
Huh?
Renaissance.
No, that's way back. But I'm saying in France, that 1890s. Yeah, there's a special name because it was considered a very, you know, just everything in the West, it was all happening and all that.
You mean after the revolution, after the French Revolution?
No, specifically 1890s. That 10 years.
Oh.
You know, I can't even remember it now. Oh, something Bell?
we are the future make
oh well.
Lumiere.
That was the candlestick guy, right? And then he was with the clock guy. Yeah. We'll ask the historian, yes. He who knows all, sees all, and what do you call it? Tastes all. Yeah. Okay, we'll work it. It's one of those things, you just have, it's right there and you can't get it, you know. So that's how Krishna, he's knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. Because if it was up to us, we'd know everything. But no, it's just right there and you can't get at it, you know. So, so therefore, we just have to move on. Whatever is our attachments is our attachments. And because we've been into that for many, many lifetimes. And so it's important to us. But it's no more spiritual today than it was 60 years ago, or last life, or the life before, 10 million lifetimes ago, it's still the same mundane thing. So we have to understand, because at that time, if we thought it was spiritual, it doesn't make it spiritual now. Right? Does that make sense? Like going out in nature, and just that feeling of nature and all that, and you think it's spiritual. But it's a mundane, it's a mode of goodness, you're appreciating Krishna's creation. But unless you connect it that the feeling is coming from Krishna, then it's material. So we have to be able to move on. So the Lord gives everybody that ability, that shakti, to either exploit the material energy or to advance in devotional service. The difference is it about ourselves or about Krishna? Squirrel's back. Yes.
Actually, here it is said that dharma artha kama, portion avidya shakti.
Yes, dharma artha kama.
And moksha is a portion of chit shakti. So, is it indication that we are all as conditionally negative? We are all going with this poor aspect.
Yes.
So actually, when we getting the idea of moksha is coming, or the activity towards the idea of moksha, there is a part with connected to the chit shakti, and there is a part with connected to avidya.
Yes, it's still connected to avidya, yeah. Because we still think I'm the controller, the enjoyer. Yes. So they couldn't enjoy as a karmi, so they want to enjoy as a jnani.
Yes.
So that will remain. But we see is that there's that the portion of the chit shakti, the position of liberation is there. It's not that the living entity in that position is necessarily absorbed in chit.
Yes.
You know, if they're actual Brahmavadis, then there's some portion of chit, and it's much greater than, because there's some portion of chit, it's much greater than the chit they have.
Yes.
And so there's something there in that aspect. But it's not as much as the devotees who are absorbed in Sat Chit Ananda, in the Lord, because that's unlimited. So that's why it says an unlimited ocean. It's not an exaggeration. They're not just saying these things because, you know, when it says, they feel the happiness increased 10 million times, that's not an exaggeration. That's actually what they're dealing with. Because if you're dealing with Krishna who's unlimited, what's 10 million times? It's nothing. It's not amazing. That's just the platform. But that 10 million times is already on that they're already happy on the transcendental platform, you know, in rasa. And that's, so that's the thing, is that it's just so, we can't even, we can say that we're more happy, less happy. But Ananda we don't actually understand. You know, like that. I was thinking today, is that sometimes they use the term marital bliss. No, I never heard it.
I heard, but what is the meaning?
Meaning marital bliss, meaning bliss, meaning, you know, happiness. So you don't just say happiness of family, like say marital bliss, like it's so fabulous. But that's the extent of what we call bliss. But on the spiritual platform, that's not called bliss. It may be more happiness than some other position, but bliss is positive. Because here, marital bliss means there's no obstacle. Right? Husband and wife can interact very nicely, and there's no obstacle. So That's called bliss, but it just means there's no obstacle. It's neutral. So we call neutrality then bliss here. You know, I get something I want, the obstacle is removed. So I'm liberated from that anxiety of that. It's that moment I call. So even in Dharma, Artha, and Kama, there's still liberation's that aspect that we're looking for. But what we want to gain something from it. While in liberation, there's nothing in Dharma, Artha, Kama to gain. You just want to be situated there. So the others, you want to be situated there with the new car. You know. While this is, you want to be situated there without the car. Yes.
In Seventh Canto, Prahlad Maharaj mentions Shruti Sukham.
Yes.
He didn't mention Shruti Anand.
Yes.
Because Sukha means material happiness. And
yes.
Even that, it's just a myth.
Yes,
it's
an idea. Material happiness is an idea. You know, like put that on a t-shirt. Yeah. So you've heard about it. But in actuality, no. You know? It's just like, you know, you hear that something's going to be good. But the thing is what's good is just, others, people are into it, they're enthusiastic, they're hoping to be happy. And so you just catch into that. You know, it's just like we see one of these marches is going on. They're there, there's an energy there, and everyone's there because of, some political issues, some good cause. But if you go around and ask each one of them why they're there, what they're doing, they'll all have something different to say. And what's their experience? It'll all be different. So it's just the idea that they're getting together and there's something that they're, So they don't. So that Shakti is what they're experiencing. But the actual accomplishment of things, the transformation, the energy is dead matter. What's it going to offer to the living entity? Right? So it's the Shakti that is flowing through that activity and that item that is attractive. But the material nature itself can't provide anything attractive to the living entity. Their consciousness, this is unconscious. Can you make friends with a rock? Not really. Right? And even if someone does have a relationship with a rock, but it's the potency of rockness that they're having a relationship with. And then there's the aspect of the particular rockhood of that rock.
And there's the dawn of the rock.
Yes, yes.
So we know that.
Yeah, a lot of stuff going on there. But I was just reading that some say that it's 200 yards away is actually where David's temple was. That's where they used to, do the ark and do different things like that. But when he built the temple, it was actually in a different place. Some say that. Some don't say that.
It's highly speculative, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. So,
whatever. But Muslims are known, it's like their tradition to build their mosques on Hindu temples or Jewish temples or any other
Christian
place.
To anybody else's temple.
That's how they establish their superiority.
Yes, yes. You build on top.
So most probably it is a place.
But now if you really were superior, you wouldn't knock down the previous structure, you'd build on top of that. You have to think about it more, right? Yes.
Another point that Kapila Dev mentions in the third canto is that explaining three kinds of bhakti, he says that meditation on Aham Brahmasmi, it's not Sarup Sira Bhakti, it's actually Sangha Sira Bhakti. Meditating on the spirit, I'm not matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily God consciousness. So it is higher than Arop Siddha Bhakti, but it's not Surup Siddha Bhakti.
Yes.
So what Mayavadis do, they go beyond metta, but they don't go into devotion as such.
Yes, yes. Okay. Where were we?
Three kinds of bhakti.
So the Aropya, you're going to be projecting your desires onto devotional service. You know, whatever it is, you want your facilities, your position, your what you want to eat, and everything. You know, it's just like, I want to eat this. Then you cook it and offer it to Krishna. So that'll technically be more Aropya, but it's devotion. Right? But then you say, what was the next one called?
Sangha.
Sangha.
Sangha is rough, but some say that Aropya is karma.
Uh-huh.
And Sangha is Gyan.
It's Gyan.
And Sarupsita Bhakti is pure bhakti.
Pure bhakti.
But it's all mixed, actually.
Yes, yes. Of course. Depends on the mentality in that, because you could be impure and just going up through those stages.
Yeah.
So and then the Sangha Bhakti is where you understand you're the soul and not the body, and like that. But that focuses on that, how you're not the material energy, that giving up desires, all these different things like that. And so it's still not on that platform of the ultimate, what you're trying to get to. It's not the Siddha Bhakti, right? Because that Siddha means that Sarup Siddha Bhakti means that you see yourself in relationship with Krishna. Because the one is you're focused on what I want to do, I'll connect it to Krishna. The other is who I am. I'm not any of that, the material. I'm spiritual, but the focus is more on I'm spiritual rather than my relationship with Krishna. Right? And then the next stage you get to is that Sarup Siddha Bhakti. Where now in your actual Sarup means your form is I'm servant, not necessarily Sarup meaning that I have my spiritual body and I'm, you know, dancing around Vrindavan. It means that Sarup, that I am servant of Krishna. That's the focus. So you can see as a devotee can go through all these in one day. You know, different times of the day be doing these things. But you'll see where the prominence is, that's where you'll say that they're situated. Right? Because even there in Aropya, there's going to be those moments where they feel I'm serving the Krishna and doing things for Krishna, and other times they understand, oh, we're not the body and this and that. But those will be less compared to the Aropya. Does that make sense? You know, so that's why, you know, Prabhu was saying it's mixed. So then the idea is that if you take these, you know, we have these upadis for engaging in the material world so that we become disgusted with it and think there must be something else. But then, because everything we do is based on upadis, then when we start, that Aropya Bhakti is based on upadis. Right? So, as a preliminary stage of moving through devotional service step by step, then it's a nice thing. If we're taking it, no, it's the standard and it's the good thing and it's better than any other position and all that, that's where the problem comes out. Right? In other words, you know, the child takes the first step, you know, then that's great. You know, but now if he claims he's an Olympic runner, then no, you're not. But he's taken the step, you know, to get there. Because I don't think there's an Olympic crawler, right? Do they have Olympics where they crawl? No. No? Not yet. Yeah. Some. Excuse me. Cow food, right? I guess they can get in and harvest now and stuff. Oh yeah, it would be the harvest, going towards harvest of the, what do you call that? Bodo, Aush, and then, what's this one called? Well, no farmers. Yeah, it means the ones that have the fragrance. It's third season. They're planted when it's hot, you know, through the wet, and then you harvest them now when it gets cold. So when it's hot, there's no fragrance. When it gets cold, the fragrance stays in the rice. So now this is the time for harvesting those. And then you get all the straw that they get for the cows. Because there's three seasons, so only at those times can you get the straw. So then you'll see there'll be a time where it's just truck after truck, you know, going to the Gosha. And then for months, no truck. And then again, you know, it's like that. Yeah. So it's important that Krishna's given these things so that we can given these things so that we start to doubt our existence separate from Krishna. Then to gain our connection with Krishna, we can use the same facility now all those upadis for Krishna. But we stop identifying with them, so they stop being upadis. Right? So within Varnashram, that, in other words, if we think upadis, we have to work in Varnashram. But we're not attached to the upadis. We're not those things. That's the problem, is that we have to use them, but as soon as we say you use, then they say, oh, but we're not this. You know, we're the soul. Yes, but the soul has a body. What's the body? What body do you have? So if you can't say what body you have, what your body is, what the mind, intelligence, ego, what circle you can move in, then how do you know what to do? You know, say, oh, I want to do this, but are you qualified for that? Because if you do something you're not qualified for, then yes, technically, mechanically you can do it, but it won't get the result it's supposed to get, because what's supposed to get? That pure devotion to Krishna. But if I'm doing something because of my attitude that, of that, how will that be devotional? Right? Or I'm in that position because of politics, how will that be devotional? You know? So that's why you act according to your qualification, but you're not that. But still, one thinks through that and has desires through that, and so one engages that. That will bring to the point, because anytime you perform the activities of karma or karma yoga, you get knowledge and detachment, right? And you perform, and why? Because bhakti, the side effects are knowledge and detachment, right? Because otherwise, to get knowledge and detachment from karma will take so many lifetimes, thousands of lifetimes, and then they'll come a little bit more forward like that. But we're doing it so quickly, but it's coming through the medium of the karma. So we're saying it's karma, but it's karma yoga, it's bhakti. If you perform like that, then that gets that, right? And so then that brings you to the jnana, so you don't identify with it. But at the same time, you still use it for Krishna. If you won't use it for Krishna, then that's an attachment to the mode of goodness, because we don't want the trouble, right? So then it's a matter of the trouble is there, and with that service, and then whatever that is, you're doing it because it's for Krishna. But we're not attached to the results that cause the trouble. We're not attached to not being going through trouble. We want to serve Krishna. That will bring us to Sarup Siddhava, where then now you're acting as a servant of Krishna, right? And then from there, then naturally, then the spiritual form develops. Then you're able to engage in the pastimes of the Lord, and that, and by that association, that brings you to prema. Then that's vastu siddhi, right? So prema bhakti is what you're trying to get to. So it's the full form of the surup siddha bhakti, right? So everything has stages like that. So someone can be working, I'm serving the Krishna and all that, even though they're not that advanced, and they still may be working on the aspects of karma and beyond. But the point is it's about that pure devotion. So that's why you see the form of it that it's using, and then there's the consciousness. And generally speaking, you'll see the form and the consciousness go together. But sometimes you'll see someone can have a higher consciousness and just using what's there.
It's in the opposite. The form is, but consciousness is
elevated. Well, that should be mentioned. You can also try to use these elevated forms, but the consciousness is not very elevated. Yes, that's a very good point. Very good point. Yes. Oh, okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai.